Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRue Show for Saturday, April 16th, 2011. I'm Marcia Mary Baker. Our topic for today was announced as the unique potential of Glass-Steagall. Now, you could also phrase that Glass-Steagall or die. You could say Glass-Steagall or bust. In other words, we're here discussing, it's not a question of illegalism, but the whole geostrategic situation, the galactic situation in which we have literal physical threats to the continuation of humanity and civilization on our planet. You see this in the Rim of Fire, earthquakes, volcanic activity, and other seismic activation and related realities. And we must have enforce a policy shift, or, as I say, the Earth is at stake. Now, when I said legalisms, it's very good news that this week on Tuesday, April the 12th, there was a reintroduction in the House of Representatives, a bill to restore the Glass-Steagall Act. In other words, from 1933, we're going to hear more about that. The name of this bill is Return to Prudent Banking Act 2011. It's H.R. 1489, and the principal sponsor is Marcy Kaptur from Ohio, K-A-P-T-U-R. She is the oldest, she's the longest serving woman in Congress. But as I say, this isn't a matter of lobbying as usual. We are today addressing the question of the, what do we mean by Glass-Steagall or die? And I think as following the introduction of this act, Mr. LaRouche was saying a couple of days later, there's no other option for the planet. We have to force the enactment. Don't look for another option. It would be like talking about life after death. Forget it. So I'm so glad we have with us to discuss this two guests today, one here near Washington, D.C., John Hofel. We welcome you.
Hi, Marcia.
And people all know John from the LPAC Weekly Report. And I certainly hope you've seen this latest one posted on LaRouchePAC.com. John may talk more about the content of some of that, but and seen John from video interviews and EIR online. But I'm also very glad to welcome from the organizing battlefront in Louisiana, the state of Louisiana, Fred Hunefeld.
Delighted to be here. Glad to be with you, Martha. Yeah.
And Fred, it's been a while. We know we talk from time to time, but Fred's speaking with us from Monroe. Fred teamed up with Harley Schlanger here. I'm sure we'll hear more about that a couple of days ago on Thursday the 14th this week to exactly on the kind of thing we're talking about now. One thing I want to say is, and repeat throughout the hour, people, it's not that you'll forget, but the 19th, that's Tuesday of April at 1 o'clock Eastern Time, there will be an international interactive webcast by Mr. LaRouche. It's on LaRouchePAC.com. Again, it's 1 o'clock April 19th. And he's titled it, I think, The Creative Universe. So that's very inspiring. And with that, what I'd like to do is begin with John on the significance. You've spoken out for years on what the principle of Glass-Steagall and so forth. So speak again, John. Reassert what we need to know.
Okay. Well, I think the place to start is the fact that the global financial system is completely bankrupt, that the only thing keeping the banks open, the only thing keeping the system operating at all is government money. That the Federal Reserve and the Treasury and more other parts of the government have effectively been turned into a ministry of bailout, which has written a blank check and is working overtime to keep the financial system going by, sucking money from wherever they can get it. So we see this phenomena of small banks collapsing at record rates. We see people, households collapsing at record rates. We see state and local governments going broke this thing is just spreading and spreading and spreading. And this is by design. There is no intent whatsoever on the part of the people who were running this operation on the from the banking side to have a recovery. There's never been that intent. That to understand what we're facing right now, you have to look at least, you know, the period since the end of World War II and since the death of FDR. And since 1971, when you had the creation of this Inter Alpha Group, what we've seen is the buildup of a giant bubble which spun off a lot of fictitious capital. And one of the purposes of this bubble was to hide the fact that we were destroying the productive end of our economy. So we thought we were making money when, in fact, we were actually shutting our economy down. And then, you know, that gets to the point where we're not really producing anymore. We now have this globalized world where most of the production is gone. And now the financial bubble pops. This happened in 2007. And so what we've seen then, at that point, then the second phase of this operation kicked in, which was to start transferring the losses from the books of the banks to the books of the governments. So we've now reached the end of that phase where the governments are all hopelessly bankrupt, too. So what's left? Okay, what's left is the system is going to be shut down. And this is where the bad bank concept comes in, that a lot of elements of the banking system, including institutions that are you would think would be insiders, are about to be cast loose. That the euro system, with all the governments and a lot of the banks of the euro system, the BRIC, of Wall Street, are all going to be dumped by the empire, and they're going to come out and create a new system, which, you know, their intent is to create this global fascist system, which operates in a world with about, you know, 2 billion people. So there is no recovery. There's no intent for recovery. We're all about to be cut loose. And, you know, the intent is to collapse. And the only thing that we can do to save ourselves from that kind of a collapse is to take the offensive, to assert our national sovereignty through Glass-Steagall, put this British imperial monetary system through bankruptcy, and go back to a U.S. system of issuing credit, and work with other nations to do the same thing. So we have to have that as a precursor to launching the kinds of development projects and science driver projects that will allow us to then start rebuilding the productivity that's been destroyed and rebuild it at a higher level. You know, so Glass-Steagall is absolutely essential to the future of the United States and the future of mankind. And this is not a fight we can afford to lose. And so, you know, we need to really get, everybody needs to get involved in this fight, and we need to push it, because if we don't, you know, we know what's going to happen. We're going to have these continuing bailouts and all of this, but this is all going to fail, and it's all going to blow up, and then there will be nothing.
Right. Look, Ma, no world. Well, this, perfect. Let's go to Fred in Louisiana, because that's what you've been putting to people, right, Fred? And it'd be interesting what your reaction and experience is in this.
Well, let's be specific. I've been very much involved in trying to get citizens to be aware of what the Glass-Steagall bill is. It separates the commercial banks from the investment banks. And 99.9% of the people I talk to, eyes roll back in the head, don't even know what I'm talking about. But I've been very pleased, once we get into the dialogue, that I've been able to get the Louisiana Realtors Association, the state association at the state convention, to adopt a resolution say we must return to the Glass-Steagall Amendment bill. And this scenario came out of Louisiana unanimously. And I sent it to the National Association of Realtors. Mm-hmm. Now, I ran into a brick wall there. Like, you know, sometimes you have a truck and you run into a brick wall and you know what happens, but you have to persevere. And I finally put enough perseverance on the chief economist with the National Association of Realtors and got the opportunity to speak before a special resolution committee at the National Association of Realtors Convention in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
They were still so afraid to do anything that they took it under advisement. They were said, well, the Dodd bill gave Paul Volcker a rule in there that's going to help out. And of course, I debated that issue with him and said that was a no-no. What, and of course, the Paul Volcker bill does not do what needs to be done as a Glass-Steagall. I referenced to them in my presentation that I had the opportunity at the National Association of Realtors in Washington a couple years ago to go one-on-one with Alan Greenspan, hand him a white paper, show him what was going to happen based on the works of Lynn, based on the works of the forecast that we've done in the past, and showing if you don't get the physical economy in balance, you can never create the wealth in the multi-factor in the economic system, so the society will collapse. No society in the history of civilization has survived as a service society. You've got to produce from the physical economy, and everything comes from the physical economy. Greenspan said, well, I did make a mistake, didn't I? Well, that's the gross understatement of the day. My point I'm making, the Greenspan influence on one of the economists with the National Association of Realtors, I want to share with you what he said to me. This was Joseph Smith. He was the lead economist of Realtors. He's been fired since then. But I approached him and captured the number of bankruptcies I had personally handled and what was happening with the imports that was putting people out of work and et cetera. And he said, well, he says, the economy is really okay. You don't have to worry about it. This is what this economist said. I said, well, look what's happened to these small towns in America. He said, listen to what he told me. This is the lead economist said, let the small towns evaporate and disappear. We don't need them. Now, that's the University of Chicago mindset. That's the free trader mindset. That's the philosophy of survival of the fittest. I got mine. I don't care about you. Needless to say, he got fired. And this next one that came on board wasn't much better, and we fired him. Now, we got one on there now. It's a little better. I'm working with him. But I'm still running into these brick walls with the National Association of Realtors, which I'm not going to stop fighting because I'm seeing a crack in the dam. I'm seeing a crack in the dam where we can do something. I think the point, Marshall, I want to make more than anything else, I personally have handled 3,000 bankruptcy cases. And 95% of the cases I handle are good people. They're victims of collapse of an economic system has been taking place and forecast very significantly, as Mr. LaRusha said, right on target. And this continued collapse will take place, just like John talked about, if we don't address the Glass-Steagall and put it back in place. I've already emailed my congressman as a result of this bill being filed Tuesday, trying to get him to co-sponsor it. I've also, Harley and I met with 20-something people at my office the other night, and we're going to do a flanking operation on Senator David Vitter this coming Tuesday at a town hall meeting, and I've already got it set up where we're going to flank him on this on the Glass-Steagall. And of course, I can see him running for cover before I even get there. But we're going to have some fun. I have also had the opportunity this morning by accident, I go to these different places to have breakfast, to read it, run into people, and the National Republican Committee woman for the Southern District was having breakfast with me, and I showed her Harley's report on the Glass-Steagall, and she said, I am for this. This is wonderful. And so I'm challenging her, and we'll be following through with her to get in touch with her, people that she's in contact with. So we're having some fun down here in Louisiana in the South.
Yeah, you sure are. And you brought up the key point for today, people listening right, you know, over the next couple of days. Congress is all in their home districts for 2 weeks as of the 16th, or they're in hiding, so you can set the dogs loose, okay? But they're available, they're accessible. As you said, Senator Vitter from Louisiana, there are others that are having to try and show their face. And we're talking about enforcement here. We're not influence, not nothing, but this has to be. So we're going to continue on that. But John, to get back to you, when you made this point that it's been the intent all along by design, this kind of sweeping destruction, you know, not just a mistake or something. Do you want to say anything about the way all these different kinds of constructs have been foisted on people and they've accepted it? I'm thinking ones you exposed in your lifetime, including the electricity deregulation, how we'll be better off with that. Or, Fred, we know the one, Fred Unifeld's familiar with the one they foisted on farmers, that you should go into risk management and learn how to play futures. And or the real estate one, securitized mortgages. Do you want to say any? Or I have to add another one. You should make a mint by putting your money on online banking services in Iceland, the Ice Save Bank. All of these, in retrospect, are, you wonder how the fairy tales could have been foisted on people, John.
Well, greed and corruption, you know, they work their ways. If you take, for example, to give you two examples, the way the oil pricing and the way the Enron model was trying to introduce a similar type of pricing in electricity. Now, the oil is very, you know, relevant today because you see a shooting up of the price of oil, even as demand for oil is declining.
Okay.
We have, you know, the investment banks have got tankers chartered, the speculators' tankers chartered, you know, sitting full in the water, parked somewhere. We've got an abundance of oil, and yet the price is shooting up. And the reason for that is that the money that they're gouging us, because you take the, you put a middleman, a financial middleman, between the producer of oil and the consumer of oil, and that financial middleman jacks up the price as high as he can. That was what Enron was all about. And it was putting into electricity what the way the oil market already works. So they're skimming off, you know, ungodly amounts of money. And some of this money goes into keeping the bubble afloat for right now. But another portion of this money is going into the oligarchy's slush fund,
mm-hmm.
so that they'll have a big slush fund so that when they collapse the bad bank systems, when they pull the plug on the rest of us, that they'll have something there they can go with. So, you know, but they're just creating, you know, they're just basically sticking their hand in your pocket and stealing. Now, another type of thing is the derivatives market,
mm-hmm.
where they're just creating assets out of thin air. The mortgage-backed securities market and all of the derivatives attached to that are a good example of that, because, you know, you take a pool of mortgages, and then you say, okay, since this pool of mortgages has an income stream, we can issue bonds against it. We can issue these securities. But the income stream for that pool of mortgages is for the repayment of the original mortgage loan. There's no extra money there. But you declare that, so you're basically creating a Ponzi scheme on the other side of this mortgage market, which then allows you to create trillions of dollars of nominal values out of thin air through mortgage-backed securities, derivatives based upon them, and all of that. But there's nothing really there. It's the old conjurer's trick of something out of nothing. And as we have seen, when that game ended, that in fact these things are worth nothing, and only extraordinary efforts by the Ministry of Bailout is keeping any of this stuff afloat right now. And the whole system is gone, and it will never come back.
Can I share a thought with you and John, what you're talking about? What I see here in America, in the agricultural area in particular, and of course I did the legal work as trustee in bankruptcy for years, complete collapse of the production sector. And it caused me to rigorously read Alexander Hamilton's work on the Report of the Manufacturers, where you put your manufacturing and you next to your production of your physical economy. But when you move it away, the only people to make money are the traders and the speculators. And that's what we see occurring today. And it's even more significant now in North Louisiana, where we used to have hundreds of cotton gins. We've got one or two cotton gins now. then the farmers have to go a long distance to get the cotton gin. And a cotton picker today, my first cotton picker cost $10,000. The cotton picker today on the plantation cost $610,000. That's devaluation of the purchasing power of the dollar. And that is so significant on what's happening in our economy today that it's hidden, as you know, it's hidden from the average citizen. They don't realize that the dollar doesn't buy as much. And that's a real, real problem. I think another major issue I'm running into is the amount of people who work for companies that are stealing money from the company. And I could give you 15 people within a area of 30 miles of Monroe, Louisiana, of working for the church or working for another company or working for a lawyer that are stealing money from the firm. And it keeps coming up in the paper. This is a signal of what's happening in America today.
Right. Well, John, let me mention, and Fred, to everyone, I want to plug the fact that people should look at LaRouche's latest paper that's posted or imminently posted on EIR online, LaRouchePub.com, on which you're listening, Playing the Great End Game. And Lynn subtitled this, All the Bad Banks Are Now Doomed, Playing the Great End Game. That the corruption you're talking about, Fred, the general downgrading, the degradation, the sequence of all of these schemes that John was just mentioning, a few of them, Enron model and you name it, all these. That John, do you want to say something about the timing? This is the end game, the great end game, right?
Yeah. I mean, to also, you know, as to respond to the points Fred made, I mean, it is the case that what is killing us is our lack of production, the decline of the physical economy and productivity. The financial games that we witness are the way in which the financial system is trying to save itself in an era where we don't produce anything anymore. But what keeps people alive is physical economic production and infrastructure and these things, and it is our shutting all of that down which is killing the country, which can kill all of us if we don't reverse it rather rapidly. That the finance stuff is sort of comes in later, and the financiers that are doing all the stealing are sort of like the maggots crawling over the corpse.
Mm-hmm.
That the real damage was done when we shut down industry, we shut down nuclear power, we shut down, you know, the science drivers, we started shutting down all sorts of things that could help us transform our economy into a higher level, and that's we're paying for that severely today.
Yeah, one thing both of you just it's in line with what you're saying. If you look at New Orleans, because of course, with Katrina, we know what happened. But even before that, in the last census for 2010 showed that the population of New Orleans lost 30% in the last 10 years. In year 2000, it was 485,000. It was falling like other cities of our nation when the Katrina hit. But in 2005, there were still 455,000 in New Orleans, and today there's only 343,000. Anyway, this shows it's by intent, right? You can't rebuild, you can't defend. Do you want to say anything about that, Fred?
Well, there's no question about it, because we run into it in some of our real estate discussions that's on a state level of what's happening in New Orleans and the collapse of the physical economy down there. And I think one point that I like to make, I've made speeches a number of times, and I would stand up and hold a catfish in my hand from Monroe, Louisiana, that was $2.50 a pound, and I hold another catfish from my other hand that was 50 cents a pound. And I ask the question, which catfish are the poor folks going to buy? And they're going to buy the 50 cent a pound catfish from Brazil. And now who's got the money? Brazil's got the money, and we got the catfish. We've collapsed the physical economy production sector within our economic system. This violates Article 1, Subsection 5, Section 8 of the Constitution of the United States. We used to have one of the most prosperous cottonseed oil mills in Monroe, Louisiana. A group of farmers and I bought the mill. We're making very good money. I got aware of what was happening with the shipment of sheep, soybean, vegetable oil from Brazil that collapsed my cottonseed market on my farm, my gin, from $200 to $40 a ton. I had to sell the gin. As a result, I told the oil mill they were going to lose $600,000. They lost $600,000. It's out of business now, and it's not being subdivided in West Monroe on the riverbank.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a collapse of the production sector of a society. And no nation in the history of man survives if you collapse your physical economy.
Yeah, and we're told that this is good for us because this allows us to buy our catfish cheaper.
That's bovine scatology.
And yes, absolutely. Because what we see is this globalization push in which makes us dependent, makes every nation dependent on its food supply and other things, on these global cartels, which then start to bleed you dry, that what we've done is we've destroyed our economy, and we're going to, you know, we may have saved a little money along the way, but we're killing ourselves. And we are about to collapse into a new dark age. People really have to understand that the plug is about to be pulled on us, and when it happens, if we can't have these measures in place ready to go either before it happens or certainly at the time that it happens so that we can shift this in the right direction, then we're basically finished as a nation.
Well, that's why it's imperative those listening to this radio station have got to get in touch with their congressmen and senators and influence with their legislation and work on this Glass-Steagall. And understand, the Glass-Steagall, when it was in place, separated the commercial banks from the investment banks. I like to say what you and Lynn say, the investment banks are the casinos. They're the gambling banks. And if you want to go gambling with your money in the Wall Street market, you know, we've got all these, John, I think you need to bring up the point of the collapse of some of these state governments. As a result of this, mm-hmm. What you're saying, the collapse of these state governments.
Yeah, that the state governments are, all hopelessly bankrupt at this point. I mean, the one good thing they have going for them is they can't, they can't issue their own credit, so there's a limit on how much money they can borrow, so they can't go as deeply into debt as a lot of the local governments. But the states are shutting down. Our government is shutting down across the country. The federal government is slashing budgets, which then takes money from the state and local governments, which are then, they're trying to either, they're making it up by cuts in services, by tax hikes, by all sorts of things. But the money is not really there. The problem is that since we lost the productive capacity, we have no way to pay this debt. It's not ever going to be paid unless we, unless we turn this economy around and go back to producing again. And you cannot cut your way to progress. You cannot cut your way to solvency. You know, I used this image before that, the budget cutters, it's like, well, we have 2 feet, we only need one, so chop, there goes a foot. If there's no foot, we don't need that leg. You chop that off, and you keep chopping things, and pretty soon what you've got is a hand holding your axe that's cut off everything it can reach, and there's just a hand and part of an arm that's left. And then where are you? You've got nothing.
Well, I share this with you. Yesterday, at the Monroe Rotary Club, Harley did a magnificent job of laying out the forecast that Mr. LaRouche had made in Monroe, Louisiana about 8 or 9 years ago at the Rotary Club, shared with them what was going to happen, and no one wanted to believe it. They wanted to run me out of town, most of them. And came back, and Harley laid out again what's happened and what's going to happen if we don't get the physical economy in balance. We don't get the production sector going again. And I share this with you, and you've heard it before from me. We know that every dollar of new wealth that's produced from the physical economy has a trade turn, a multi-factor, an earned income, its rollover factor, farmer, elevator, baker, grocery store, tractor manufacturer, tractor dealer, and back to the farmer. But if the physical economy producer, whether it's the farmer, or the oil man, or the fisherman, can't buy the pickup, General Motors goes broke, the employees are laid off, they can't buy bread, the baker don't bake it, and the elevator doesn't buy the wheat from the farmer. Natural law collapses the economy. And that's what it's obvious what's going to happen, John, if we don't get the right economic policy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you look at the way the tax bases are eroding. The problem is not spending. The problem is a collapsed tax base that we do not create the wealth anymore. We don't have all of the businesses operating, the smaller manufacturers and all sorts of things. We've become increasingly cartelized. These giant cartels move all their production all overseas in chasing the lowest wage, and so the wage levels in the country keep dropping. The one thing that was keeping a lot of counties going was the artificial increases in real estate from this mortgage-backed derivative scam, and that's now popped, and so the tax base is just collapsing, and no government can survive that kind of a collapse of its tax base.
I've got the most perfect example of what you said. In 1974, General Motors came to Monroe, Louisiana. The president of General Motors, the governor of the state, was at my farm and bought some land from me to build a General Motors guide lamp plant, to build headlamps. They built the plant. It lasted about 10 to 15, maybe 20 years, I think it is, before they shut it down and moved it to Mexico. And there's a vacant plant out there on 300 acres right now, just sitting there. No production. And they're trying to get something going. What you're going to put in something you can't have a sale of what you put in there. And it's a perfect example of collapsing the physical economy but stopping the production sector. And that's what we're seeing nationwide. And that's just a small example I see.
Well, one thing is I'm glad to hear that something isn't demolished, because it does have use value once the policy's put in place, right? You know, the plant for another reason, or the field, the physical economy that's still there. And that brings up, John, what you alluded to, and Fred as well, that you said, John, right at the beginning, the Glass-Steagall allows you, this intervention, this principle, allows you to reorganize what resources, even though they may be diminished and degraded, so that you can start to build out of this mess. You can also start to do urgent things like pay for the, I'm not talking about money. Use the resources to conduct monitoring of the planet from space, just the things that the Obama administration on behalf of London is cutting. You know, they're cutting, for example, a polar satellite orbit system called JPSS, Joint Polar Satellite Orbit System. They're cutting other things true scientists know would allow you to be able to know more about the solar system, the galaxy, certainly the Earth's interconnections, and would allow us to have warnings of earthquakes. So this reorganization of resources, this potential, do you want to say something about that, John?
Well, you know, the Glass-Steagall is an essential thing to do, but it's only the beginning. I mean, it's sort of like, if you want to clean the bathroom, you start by flushing the toilet.
Okay.
And, you know, Glass-Steagall is a lot like flushing the toilet. We're going to just clean all this, you know, flush all this funny money, all these fictitious claims. Just going to get rid of them. We're going to outlaw derivatives. We're going to go through and protect actual commercial banking, that the kind that serves the economy, because we do need banks in order to have an economy function. But we don't need the casino. We don't need Wall Street. We're going to just let all of that go. You know, if they say this stuff is all worth money, fine. You know, you're on your own. No more government support, and let's see what it's worth, huh?
Yeah, they can go eat it, right?
They can go eat it. Well, I'll stop there. But, you know, we're headed, as we've been developing in the last weekly reports and other things on our website, you know, as our basement science investigation continues, that we're headed into a period where we're going to have more natural disasters here on Earth, we're headed into a period where it's likely to we'll have an increase in earthquake activity and volcanic activity, especially around the Pacific Rim of Fire. And we've already seen an increase in activity of volcanoes and earthquakes over the past couple of years. And if you think about the possibility of the increased possibility that we're going to have a major earthquake in the Bay Area or up in the Seattle area or maybe down in Southern California. And what, on the one hand, we now know that there are things that can be done to give us advance warning of these earthquakes, which is essential because if you're going to, if you can say that a major earthquake is about to happen, you can begin to move people out of the area. You can save a lot of lives. Otherwise, you know, people will just be caught off guard. Suddenly, out of seemingly nowhere, you'll have this gigantic earthquake. A lot of people will die. You'll have utter devastation. And then, you know, if we can't rebuild New Orleans after Katrina, we certainly cannot rebuild the Bay Area. You know, we don't have all the equipment. We don't have the heavy equipment. We don't have the wire, the pipe, the, you know, all the other things to restore basic infrastructure to begin to clean up all the mess and then to begin to rebuild. So, you know, if we get hit with one of these things, we're in real trouble because we no longer have the physical economy to support rebuilding an area like that.
Yeah, let me throw in here, Fred, you can comment or not as you wish, but of course you're speaking to us, Fred, from the lower Mississippi Basin on which in North America, apart from what John just described about the Pacific Coast in California, Oregon, and Washington, Alaska, and so you have the New Madrid seismic zone that when the Louisiana Territory still existed, that just south of where the Ohio River comes into the Mississippi, in a little village called New Madrid in Missouri, in 1811-1812, there were a series of very, very severe earthquakes, and they've been monitored ever since. And you're in a hot spot on the entire planet. Do you have any, but of course, everything that John just said applies.
Well, I think there's some interesting scenarios occurring in our system with the influence of the rays for the cosmic radiation and cosmic rays. And I've had the opportunity to visit with one of my doctor friends here in Monroe who was in mission control when they landed on the moon. And this was one of the significant facts of right temperature conditions when they landed on the moon. And he was right there in mission control. And we've had beautiful discussions about this since we've been discussing it recently. What we're seeing also, and it causes you to say, what's happening with the energy frequencies? We see all of a sudden 1,000 blackbirds just dead on the road in Arkansas. And then we see another 1,000 dead on the road in Texas and another in South Louisiana. This occurred about 2 months ago on February the 1st. What condition caused them to all of a sudden that to happen? There's got to be a relevant to the energy frequency somewhere. John, I know this sounds crazy, and some people think I'm nuts when I say this, but we know from the farm standpoint that the animals and the dogs start acting up when a tornado's coming. And my daughter called me last night when the tornado went to Atlanta, the dogs in the house were just having a fit. So they are hearing something, and animals do hear those energy frequencies.
Well, they do, and you can see in animal behavior that the animals often will tell you that something is about to occur that we don't pick up. And so it's sort of troubling that the animals seem to understand these things better than we do. You know,
this is a change in electromagnetic energy frequencies. And we got a lot of work and research to do in this. And I demonstrate this morning to a group of businessmen I met with at my Ben Franklin philosophical and political discussion today of changing the energy on an individual and never touching him and lowering his energy, his resistance to me lowering his arm. And it works every time. And I never touch the individual, but I can do that. Mm-hmm. Because it's a change in energy frequency, and we're all energy. That's what we are.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much that we don't really understand. And, you know, we have, in the case of the earthquakes and the volcanoes, we now know, looking back in hindsight at some of these things, some of the scientists who studied some of the data, that there were indications well in advance of some of these major earthquakes. And so we can look, we can do this kind of monitoring. There are other things that we can do and, you know, begin to at least understand how all of this works and how this relates to humanity, because our, you know, life on Earth is affected, it depends upon these cosmic rays. So you have the, you know, the Earth in the solar system with the sun that's putting out rays. You have the solar system in a galaxy which has its own, you know, electromagnetic dynamic, and then we're passing through a universe, and you can see major changes on Earth as we pass through spiral arms of the galaxy and other things like that. So there's a whole lot of things going on out there that we really have only begun to understand. And, you know, if we're going to protect, if we're going to have the human species survive, we've got to begin to understand those things. And it's not just a matter of understanding and what's happening, but as we develop our creative potential, we can influence what happens, and we can then help shape the universe that we live in. So
I call it taking dominion over natural law.
Yeah.
and that's what we have to do. From the physical economy production, as a cotton picking farmer, I plant the seed, and the seed starts growing, and I have to culture and take care of that seed and fertilize it, and the more I get the, and this is interesting, the electromagnetic frequencies come from those plants. I have demonstrated that on my farm. I have taken certain solutions of going with the phenomena of raising the brick level on my cotton, where insects will fly over my field and not go into my field, and I don't have to poison it, because I've increased the energy level of that plant to a brick level of 12. And Dr. Adolf Brick in Germany found this significance. Every plant, everything you eat and ate, has a brick level.
Mm-hmm.
And the energy of that brick level at the highest level is healthy. You don't get sick. You're healthy. You don't get cold. And it all goes back to the level of energy that you receive from the correct brick level of the food you eat. And I've gone from four locks of cotton on one of my cotton bowls to six, because I've increased the brick level of my cotton plant. And I can tell you before it rains, a day or two ahead of time, if I take the leaf of my cotton plant and put my refractometer meter up and measure the brick level and squeeze the juice out of that cotton leaf and tell if it's going to rain or not the next day. we got so much we don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's right. I was just putting in a plug. John, I mean, the whole people who are regulars who are listening to this, it's not necessarily live, but on the message line and so forth, what you're talking about is part of the activation of people's minds when, at a certain level, Operation Kepler is what it's been called. Will you say something about this, John, that the LPAC basement team is conducting to connect with people internationally and mobilize for the maximum conceptualization?
Yes, but what we're doing is we're taking these ideas that we're developing and talking to as many scientists around the world who are receptive as possible to try to get momentum to get other people involved in this, to tap into some of the scientific circles in places like Russia and the Ukraine and other parts of the world where we can, you know, spur a project, an international project, to begin to study these things and to really figure it out, because this is the future of mankind. And so, you know, we've had this project studying Kepler and Riemann and Gauss and others and moving up into Einstein, and, you know, we've had this scientific project for a long time, and now we're gaining enough traction in it that we're going out and organizing a whole new scientific movement. And, you know, this is really very exciting because, you know, while we have talked a lot about the financial system and all of this stuff in the past, that is all about to end.
One way or another, you know, so we're going to...
And it's dead, and so the question is no longer, can you believe what they're doing in the casino? The question is, okay, the casino is over. What is it going to take for us to survive? And that's what this project, you know, the Operation Kepler is all about, because this is leading the world into a real future to give us, you know, a new, not just a new renaissance, but a whole new conception of what mankind can do when we put our minds to it. That we're so used to being treated as cattle by this oligarchic system of, you know, sit down and shut up, don't have an opinion. If we want your opinion, we'll give it to you through our media. And you just be concerned with yourself, and we'll throw you a bone every now and then, but don't buck the system. Well, we're talking here about, you know, participating in the reorganization and the development of the whole system. You know, it's a completely different conception of man, and one that does not coexist well with this oligarchic herd us into the shearing pen, and then when we're no longer when you no longer produce enough wool to herd us into the slaughterhouse.
Yeah, down the chute. Let me, and I hope people, again, this is a motivation which people might not need, but the interview last week we had on a direct report from the Vienna International Conference of the Geoscience Union, and this week on LaRouche Political Action Committee, that is LaRouchePAC.com, there in particular is the interview of the multi-parameter precursors that can be studied and understandable to earthquakes and volcanic activity, an interview from that conference with Sergei Poulinets, and John's weekly report with Mr. LaRouche and two basement team leaders follows that. But this is exactly part of the reality in which we are forcing the issue on Glass-Steagall, that we're going to have a credit and a development system of the world or die. And before the time of the show is out, John and Fred, one of our main tasks here in this country is to have Obama put out of office. He's still loose. John might want to describe him as part of the operations of the empire types, just like George Soros and other franchises that are still running loose. But Obama, for example, this week he's in office. He's going to Reno, Nevada to speak. He's speaking here in Northern Virginia. He's having a Facebook speech on Wednesday. It can be called the butt book or something more vivid. And he's a talking parrot for the empire ideas of let's all share the pain. He also says let's share the prosperity. So what do you want to say about the prospects and the job of getting him out of the way, John, and Fred?
Well, I mean, the guy's got to go. He's implementing fascist policies. He's doing absolutely nothing to help the people of the United States, that everything he does is counterproductive to our welfare, that he continues to preside over this open-ended biggest bailout in the history of the world. He's getting us into more wars. We have the ever-increasing police state. All of the things that he was supposed to be against when he was elected, he's now for. Because, you know, you can see, you know, he comes by his mustache naturally. I mean, you know, these are fascist policies.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way, because fascism is the only way that you can keep a population under control when you do to them what these people are doing to us. And so this is all by design. This is not accident. This is not some disagreement over policy. This is a fascist coup going on inside the United States as we speak. And, you know, it's being run by the empire. It's being run by the financiers. Obama doesn't really have an opinion in his head other than this fantasy that people care what he thinks. You know, his godlike complex. You know, he keeps staring up into outer space as if God is going to reach down and pat him on the head. But You know, he's got to go, and this whole strat has got to go. Our government is completely dysfunctional. The Republicans and the Democrats are, in large part, you know, fighting at each other for political advantage while the whole country collapses. And the world is already in a position where you have the relative potential population density, or the carrying capacity of the planet, is lower than the actual population and falling because of decreased economic activity, which means that the level of population is going to be falling, and as that level of population is falling, it's chasing a falling potential. And this, so the genocide, the imperial genocide, is already locked in, and the only way to stop it is to turn this thing around immediately and begin with the kinds of development programs that we've been talking about. That's the only way you're going to stop it. So all the empire really has to do is stall, and they're going to get their chaos. Now, they're not going to survive their chaos. That's a mistake on their part. They're going down too. But that's no consolation to the rest of us. So this whole thing, Obama, this fascist apparatus, the financier casino, it's all got to be thrown out, and it's got to be thrown out now.
I think one of the most important things that people don't understand is what you just said, increased potential relative population density. And what in effect means there's no limit to growth in a society that has the correct economic policy. And you have to regulate the value of the money. You have to get the true value of the physical economy based on your standard of living. You do that with policy. And I think, John, one thing you might want to mention particularly is how a republic issues credit to solve these problems. Can you share that moment?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the way we issue money now is that the Treasury issues money through the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve that goes out and sells Treasury bonds on the market, and then so, in effect, we're paying this oligarchic financial system a tribute of some percentage of every dollar we create for them allowing us to create it. So we just bypass them completely. And instead of selling bonds into the market, we go with the Hamiltonian system where the Congress authorizes expenditures and creates the credit for it, that this is issued through a National Bank of the United States. And so we create our money directly, and we issue it out for productive projects and other useful social things, and that therefore we don't have to pay all of this overhead to the financial system. We don't subsidize them. That we bypass this parasitic apparatus completely and operate on, you know, this Hamiltonian credit system, which means there's no waste. We're not letting the casino get a handle on any of this, and we're taking our money and we're directing it into projects which increase the productive power of human labor and increase relative potential population density. And this is how you produce wealth. This is a system that works.
I think, can I share one thing with you? I just received a book called A Convention of Delegates, The Creation of the Constitution, written by Dennis Hautley. And it goes into the men that were at the convention and their discussion and dialogue. And it's the best I have ever read, because when you finish understanding what they went through and the compromises they made to put this constitutional republic together, and go right into reading the Constitution itself, it flows, John. I've never had it flow like that before.
Uh-huh.
And it was beautiful. It was beautiful. And it's a little small book, I just wanted to mention it to you.
Okay, why don't you give that name again?
It's A Convention of Delegates, The Creation of the Constitution by Dennis Hautley, Hautly. Excellent. Excellent. It's not very long, but it goes into the background of each one of the delegates and their discussion and compromise, particularly Alexander Hamilton. It was great. It was great.
They were a lot more educated back then than our current crop of...
Their level of thought process was a lot higher than ours.
Well, in the remaining minutes, let me just throw something in here. You can also add any other points you had in mind. before we run out of time. But, Fred, speaking of raising people's thought processes or otherwise kicking them in behind, you have, for example, in Louisiana, I think 6 of your 7 House members of the House of Representatives are Republicans, right? And one of your senators, and that. And I'm not, the issue now is patriots and people who think we're not talking about party labels.
That is exactly right.
But I want to stress to you, your point you made before, everyone listening, this is the job today. Whatever you may be hearing this show on, archived on our LaRouchePub.com or otherwise, we have to make this happen. The Glass-Steagall and the policy shift, which is possible. And I want to throw out our phone number. We always don't do this, but to confer with anyone about what you can do, report anything in. It's like a hotline. It's 800. It's a toll-free 800 in the U.S., 800-278-3135. That's EIR Online's number, 800-278-3135. So besides the subscriptions and readership on EIR Online, and of course you should be coordinating with LaRouche Political Action Committee, looking on LaRouchePAC.com all the time, every day, but it's now's the time to activate. So Fred, I'm not even restricted to Louisiana. You often operate interstate all over the place.
I got to share a quick story.
Okay, yes, do.
Quick. In Aurora, Nebraska, in a one-room schoolhouse on the Hunefelt Farm in 1882, there was a bust of George Washington and Frederick Schiller.
Okay.
And it still exists today in Aurora, Nebraska, those two busts of Frederick Schiller and George Washington. Is that culture?
That's culture. That beats the bust of the Inner Alpha Group, which we're witnessing now.
That's right.
Right.
Thank you very much for letting me share a few moments with you.
Well, Fred, we have 3 more. Do you want to say anything about the, you know what I mean, any special advice on the...
Well, I've already emailed my congressman, and we're going to set up some dialogues at the next town hall meeting that we'll have some people stand up and say, are you for the banks or are you for us? And we were Glass-Steagall. And this time we're going to have other people stand up with me. The last time I stood up, I was by myself. And I got a picture of it, just by myself making the pitch. But this time, I might even bring my lariat rope, John, so I can lariat rope to Congress.
All right.
I've seen you do that in Congress in Washington. Well, that's it. That'll make a big impression.
Glad to get them.
Yeah, that's right. Well, John, you have a few minutes at the end. I don't know if you want to go to the question of the empire may be evil, but they're dumb and bankrupt, or on reorganizing to shift the universe to a higher level, either one.
Well, I think, you know, you summed up the state of the empire pretty well. They think of themselves as the kings of beasts, and they're clever, but, you know, the lion never was able to transform Africa. To the extent they think they're animals, they act like animals, and they have the same success in solving problems that the animals have. They can't change anything. But I think also what we're witnessing, there's an attempt to hijack the debate over financial reform by front groups of the Inner Alpha Group, notably George Soros.
Okay.
You have, for example, this movie Inside Job, which correctly identifies a lot of problems. But what it does, very interestingly, is it presents the Brits as the voices of reason. The Financial Times crowd, the International Monetary Fund, you know, this sort of thing. So it's on the one hand, it makes the Americans look like idiots, but on the other hand, it plays America for idiots because they're giving you the Brits as the people to help us get out of this. And Soros just sponsored this new Bretton Woods conference at the site of the FDR's Bretton Woods, and this whole conference is designed to set in motion to the springing of this Inner Alpha trap where, the nation states go down. The whole idea is to use this financial crisis to destroy the nation states so that only the empire is left standing. That's the plan. Everything they do is oriented towards that plan. And, you know, some of their puppets may be cast off, but this is what the puppet masters are doing.
That's complete devaluation of your currency to make it easier for them to take away and do away with the sovereign nation state.
Yeah.
So that's it. I guess that, and I want to thank you both. And in closing, remind people, April 19th, that's a Tuesday at 1 o'clock Eastern Time on LaRouchePack.com. For Lyndon LaRouche and the international webcast titled The Creative Universe. And otherwise, do phone, do change the terms of the leadership of the country, 800-278-3135. So I thank Fred Unifeld in Monroe, Louisiana, John Hofel with LPAC, with EIR Online, and this is Marcia Mary Baker signing off, April 16th, 2011, The LaRouche Show. Thank you.